Welcome, believers. This is Lucha Lowdown. I am your host and El Jefe of this podcast, at least for one more night, James Kincaid. With me tonight, El Guapo Jeff Budd.
This podcast ends, and one of us is never doing the podcast ever again.
Good spoiler for a foreshadowing.
For no reason. Yeah. We'll just throw in that stipulation.
We're just adding that in.
And the crowd goes silent, and the smiles disappear.
Yeah, well, and then they start eating it up again, oddly enough, because they're savages. But this is Lucha Lowdown. We apologize for the long break that we took as Ultima Lucha Trace was unfolding in front of our eyes. Schedules got crazy. I ended up in China. Jeff's been working hard. And then we just sort of came to the joint conclusion that let's let it all play out, and then we're going to do one super Ultima Lucha Trace review, breakdown, episode, postmortem, whatever you want to call it, reactions to everything that Ultima Lucha Trace had to offer, and just talk Lucha Underground and its future and where that stands and everything like that. But how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing really well. And boy, did it have a lot to offer or what? You know, it's
Four episodes strong, including a 2-hour episode. So it was an epic, epic event. And you can hear me say this a lot tonight, but if this was Lucha Underground's end, it went out emptying the chamber. So well done by them. I think Ultima Lucha Trace lived up to both of the previous iterations and surpassed them in many ways. So I just think all the good things that we've discussed in previous episodes about, like, an Aztec Warfare, how you see how they weaved all the stories together and how they end stories, we get all of that in the 4-part Ultima Lucha Trace. Overall thoughts on this epic 4-part show, Jeff? Without getting into spoilers of the matches, just did you think it lived up to the billing?
I'd say most of it lived up. I wouldn't call this like something that had ups and downs, but I thought it had a couple matches that were just okay, and then it had some really good highlights.
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely some matches that, in terms of the in-ring quality, were not like anything to write home about. But I mean,
even to the point where I didn't think everything story-wise was satisfying.
Okay.
And we'll get into it.
All right. Well, yeah, let's dive right into part one of Ultima Lucha Trace, which, you know, we get the full-on, the video, introduction and everything like that, what we're coming to. Vampiro, Matt Stryker setting the scene. But the first match of Ultima Lucha Trace is the Tejano's contract being on the line versus Famous B versus Tejano. And it starts out with Famous B saying that he made some calls to Dario Cueto because of the condition he's in to make it an actual handicap match. And before I get to who he introduced, I'm sitting there thinking, I was like, wait, but Dario Cueto's the one that made this match and made the joke that it's a handicap match.
As a legitimate handicap match. I thought it was a reference to Famous B being broken.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was supposed to be. So I didn't really understand the psychology there, if they were going to do it that way. But be that as it may, Dario had a change of heart and was going to make it an actual handicap match. And he made a call to Dr. Wagner Jr. And Jeff, this was your guy since he broke into Lucha Underground. And I thought of you immediately. What did you think about seeing Dr. Wagner Jr. back at Ultima Lucha?
Dr. Wagner Jr. popping up is why I didn't care so much about the confusion of what a handicap match was supposed to be, in a sense. I was like, well, you know, I mean, it's an excuse to get Wagner in there. Who really cares? My whole thing about the Dr. Wagner Jr. Famous B relationship is Famous B is supposed to work for him, but it always seems like Dr. Wagner Jr. is doing favors for Famous B.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, he got wrapped up in that whole Masquerita feud and then ended up getting beaten up by Son of Havoc. You know, it's like he always seems to step in and help him out. He has to beat up Tejano for him.
Tejano. When we got the beautiful Brenda back in the nurse outfit.
Back in her nurse's gear, which I greatly prefer. I love her as sexy cowgirl, but nothing beats sexy nurse.
Yeah, maybe, I like
unless
the cast
they get some
on
sort
arm.
Of like French wrestler and then she's sexy French maid. That'll be fine too.
I like the sling that she had with the red cross on it. Even that was nurse themed and everything like that.
Yeah,
it was perfect. And during the match, just hearing her, I'm so crippled right now, I can barely help. It's like her shrill voice just echoing throughout. It's like, God dang, Brenda. But this was a match that was, it was nothing to write home about in the ring. It was a pretty standard fair handicap match. Distraction finish with Brenda distracting Tejano, leading to the surprise roll-up pin by Famous B, feet on the ropes, with the victory. So Tejano's contract now belongs to Famous B. That's love a finish it. You usually see other places in terms of the surprise roll-up pin being like the big move of doom. But I thought in this sense it was totally fine. It was a good kickoff to Ultima Lucha Trace, and I thought it was honestly the outcome that I thought they should go with, because if Lucha Underground continues on, it's going to be an interesting story with Tejano. What'd you think?
Oh, no, I completely agree. This is one of like the lighter storylines, so I thought it was a good way to start things off. And yeah, I mean, what if Tejano had fought him off? What? And then the story's over?
It
just seems like a big waste of time. Yeah, exactly. And then Tejano would still be stuck exactly where he was before this storyline happened, with nothing to do and just sort of being wasted. Here, we can have him set up in different matches. You know, you got the comedic element. And I think having Famous B and Brenda with him is really going to help, because even though I like Tejano, it's more his in-ring stuff I like. You know, his personality doesn't really, you know, translate outside of the ring so much. So I think this will work as far as him being able to play off of them and vice versa.
It just doesn't seem like Dr. Wagner Jr. is a long-term investment for Lucha Underground anyway.
Precisely.
So then you're left without anything for Famous B, really. So I actually think moving forward, if we do get more, that's an interesting storyline. So I thought they made the right call there, and good call. And a smashing return right out of the gate too. So I love it when things that we discuss on the podcast is like, well, where's Dr. Wagner Jr. been? And, you know, seeing them get answered in the show and everything like that is just really nice. For the rest,
bringing down the house at the end of the season, just like last year. That's
just lying in wait. That's what he does. he shows up at Ultima Lucha and wins.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the Undertaker. even when maybe, you know, booking wise dictates that somebody else should win. Nope. It's just him.
Are there any thank you chants? There should have been.
So for the rest of the evening, Ultima Lucha Trace Part 1, it is the Hell of War match, which is a 2 out of 3 falls hardcore match, essentially. The first fall is First Blood or Primera Sangre. Second fall is no disqualification, and then the third match is what did they call it? It was essentially an ambulance match, but you had to get your opponent into like the medevac military vehicle and close the doors. And so this was between Dante Fox and Killshot, a storyline. Again, this has been brewing all season long, and it's coming to a head at Ultima Lucha Trace in a match that was so gory. And I think you even texted me that it was grotesque at some points, and it was. But this was something I'll never forget watching for the first time. I just would say right off the bat, kudos to both Dante Fox and Killshot for what they did, and not to be the "it's still real to me, damn it" guy. But when you think about the things that guy said in the meme, you know, as far as the things that these guys did to their bodies for the entertainment of the fans, just standing ovation for them. What did you think about the Hell of War match?
Yeah, dude, it was a grisly match. And I think you and I both watched it like night of, so I think that's back when we texted. I just rewatched it today to refresh my memory. Dude, yeah, what an intense match. All I can say is kudos to both performers. And then, I mean, season 3, there are 3 guys who I think really own this season as far as their storylines and how their careers progressed in the temple. And 2 of them were in this match.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of fitting who the third one was, because I'd say it's the Mac. And so as far as the 3 of them coming, like something that we'll talk about later. Dude, I loved how they designed this. Killshot has been in like 2 of the best gimmick matches that I've seen in the temple.
Yes.
The theme is outstanding. The only other one that I can think of that I really enjoyed, of course, was the police officer one.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's exactly what this kind of show can deliver for us.
Yeah.
It's like these really, like, fantastic battles, super themed, you know, wrestling matches. It's like watching a fighting video game.
It is. I mean, they did some things in this match that are just insane. I mean, like the step-up ring post moonsault that Dante Fox did to Killshot when the ladder was propped up against the ring.
That's one of my favorite parts.
You even see a look on Dante Fox's face after he lands it. He even heard himself doing it. It's just that, and I really liked Matt Stryker on commentary in this match when he referenced Wolverine and Sabretooth in terms of these guys feuding. I thought that was so apt because it works that, perfectly. That even if Vampiro was no-selling it, it works.
Dude, Vampiro shot that down so fast.
Yeah, he was like, no, man, it's nothing like that. It's what this proves is that Killshot did leave Dante Fox behind. I'm like, wait, how the hell did you get to that conclusion? But whatever.
It proves nothing. It proves that Dante believes that's what happened. But until Killshot would admit to it,
I
thought that would have been an interesting twist if there was some evidence of it.
I mean, the leaping leg drop with the chairs on the apron, and Matt Stryker asking great question as far as, like, you know, if Killshot gets busted open in the head, you know, how's the ref going to know? But the ref was checking throughout. The use of the plate glass comes up a couple times in Ultima Lucha Trace.
You gonna help me or are you gonna bleed?
Yeah, exactly. He's threatening the ref.
That was awesome.
But when they set it up in the ring, finally led to the first fall, which was the back body drop from the top turnbuckle, Killshot going through the plate glass. What were you thinking? I mean, because I was freaking out. I was just like, it was insane.
It had already been a wild match. And I knew it was going to get really gross. And it definitely got worse from there.
Yeah. For both guys.
Exactly. Like what I was texting you today, just the aftermath of it, they still looked like was disgusting. I don't think I was so blown away when it happened, just because, I don't know, I think I was psychologically prepared for it. I knew it was just going to be one of those types of matches where both of them are great athletes. And they don't need to, you know, do all that hardcore stuff to entertain, but that's also what the nature of this match is. And so it's just, overwhelming to the senses in all parts. And is just one of those kinds of matches to watch. It's just incredibly entertaining. That's why it's one of my top five.
Yeah, and so that was what ended the first fall with Killshot bleeding from his back. Then it went to the no DQ stipulation. And Killshot returned the favor in kind when he busted out, like, that big barbed wire piece of plywood or whatever. And threw Dante Fox through that, and just his reaction, and just more than just the gimmicks in the match, they were telling a great story too. Because, you know, there was one point where Killshot hit one of his big signature moves, and Dante kicked out at one, and was almost like hulking up during the match. Just the hatred and the desire to beat one another. They were telling a great story in the midst of all this gore and violence, and it was really living up to the name of the Hell of War match. I mean, there was one point where it's like, eventually Dante Fox sliced up his back on either the barbed wire or the shattered glass that remained in the ring. I was like, you got to clean up that ring. These guys are going to get seriously hurt. I mean, there was like chunks of both of them coming off, and it was just, man, again, their willingness to do that was impressive, and they delivered a hell of a show, and Killshot picked up the last two falls. He picked up the win in the no DQ match, with a Killshot onto more of the glass, and then he would pick up the win in the ambulance match when Dante Fox fell from the bandstand, through more plate glass, and then was shut in the ambulance. I was blown away by this match. I thought, what an incredible main event and a tough act to follow for the rest of Ultima Lucha Trace. Anything else you want to say about this match?
Well, yeah, kind of tough act to follow, not only because the two of them did such a great job with the match, but yeah, it also was fine storytelling throughout the match and throughout the season. So I thought this was one of the ones where the buildup was sustained and I thought handled correctly, and then was executed perfectly, you know, when we were basically getting our climax to the story.
Yeah. It was.
I mean, it's everything you would hope for.
And the right guy won
something like this.
Even though, Dante Fox, like, you know, I would say I tend to lean Dante Fox a little bit more in terms of just he's shown
story
me so
wise,
much this
though,
season.
I still think Killshot's in the right of it, though.
I think Dante Fox
is just mistaken.
And totally the right call on who should come out on top of this story arc.
Yeah.
And so they did right with that. And so that was a hell of a start to Ultima Lucha Trace. So part two, we kick it off with a signature vignette of Lucha Underground, and it's Ivelisse and Jeremiah Crane fighting in the locker room. And he's acting very much so like the Jeremiah Crane that we first saw break onto the scene that I did not care for. He's turned
well,
back.
Well, that's the one that's dating Eva Lee.
Yeah, I know. That's very true. He's a different person with her. He's really churning up the douche. And he's like,
well, because he's not happy. He's living a lie.
He is living a lie. Although I guess he's not living it anymore because they're having problems in their relationship, and I guess he admitted to Eva Lee off camera
well,
that he's in love
around.
With someone else. That's true. You're hurt all the time. And he admits that he's in love with Katrina, and then calls Eva Lee a bitch, and she pump kicks him through the bathroom stall there. What'd you think of this?
When I watched it for the first time yesterday and I was texting you about it, one, I do think it's funny that Eva Lee is offended when someone calls her a bitch because
she's the baddest
she
bitch
refers
in the building.
To herself as a bitch more than she does as a woman. You know, she's a bitch. That's what she is. And then I would have done things a little differently with how this episode ended. So that's why, like I said, the reveal of Jeremiah Crane not being into her and instead of being, you know, at least one-sidedly romantically involved with her rival.
Yeah,
I would have had the reveal more in the ring. That's also the weird balance with Lucha Underground is how much of the story do you tell in the vignettes and how much of the story do you allow to unravel in the ring, whether it's during the match or, you know, post-match stuff.
If Ultima Lucha Tres has a weakness, though, I'll say that I could have gone for a couple more vignettes, to be honest. There were so many matches to get through.
It was just so booked.
Yeah.
They have so many friggin' people. And, like, I'm looking at the list of matches. You know, I mean, they're all important.
Yeah.
All of this needed to be resolved, basically.
Well, there are a couple, like this unique opportunity battle royal. That was thrown in late.
Yeah, but it was.
It led to something.
Yeah, exactly. This was one of the times where I thought the unique opportunity actually mattered.
Yeah.
But then that's also kind of their own fault, because I would have rather seen other people fight that second match instead. But story-wise, it didn't make sense, because Phoenix would have been double booked.
And given the future of Lucha Underground being up in the air, I'm happy they did this battle royal just to get more people on the card and everything like that. I think that's nice. And so it worked. It's part of what Lucha Underground does. You had Masquerita Sagrada involved there. You had a returning Pimpinella Escalante or whatever coming back. So you had Pimpy making a return to the temple. What did you think of that?
I thought of you immediately when I saw
and
Pimpinella.
I thought of you.
I did. So, yeah, but Pimpinella is one of yours.
No, definitely one of yours.
You talk about Pimpinella every time Pimpinella is on the screen. I try not to.
I like the fans pushing their friends into Pimpy to get the kiss.
This is why we don't sit in the front.
Dude, I would be pushing you so fast. I would
rather Dante Fox accidentally kick me in the head.
I would push you in so fast just to prevent you from doing the same to me.
I would rather, and I wouldn't, and that's why
I don't know. I love you to death, but I can't trust that. It can only go so far.
You know what's funny is I can't even trust myself, because if you ask me, it's like, no, of course I wouldn't do that to James. He wouldn't enjoy it, and that would ruin our evening. But it's like, I don't know, that impulse right there, it's like, boy, this will be funny.
You know what? Honestly, though, I think if it happened...
Hey, James, you made the show.
If it happened, I actually think it would be pretty hilarious.
It would be hilarious.
Yeah. Arhennis was in this match.
And you need to take that dive and, you know, answer some questions that you have about yourself, too.
Yeah, exactly. Arhennis was also in this match. He got eliminated by Pimpy. Like...
Was Arhennis in this match? Has Arhennis actually participated in any match?
Has he ever won a match in Lucha Underground?
No, he absolutely has not.
Man. Yeah, Arhennis was eliminated pretty quickly here. But this got a lot of the talent in the locker room involved that didn't otherwise have matches. And I was rooting for Masquerita Sagrada in this match.
I was rooting for PJ.
Yeah, I was all in on Masquerita. I thought it would have been a great win for the little fella. But... It went to the Mac, which, and the unique opportunity turned out to be that
all this guy does is win. In
dude,
season.
Yeah, like you said, season 3 has been a big one for the Mac.
Yeah,
he came in with an eyelash of beating Johnny Mundo for the championship, and he's done a lot of big time things this season.
Yeah, the Battle of the Bulls to lead up to that Mundo match. It's like, he's doing really well for himself.
Yeah, he had a great season. So he won the Unique Opportunity Battle Royal, and the Unique Opportunity turned out to be when Dario graced us with his presence. It turned out to be a trios championship match with two people that had just gone to war in the previous episode, Dante Fox and Killshot. Were so the uniqueness of the opportunity was that Dario would get to pick the partners. So that then set up the match later on in Ultima Lucha. Trace.
You keep screwing people over like this, Dario. They're not going to participate in these unique opportunities.
I mean,
matches.
As far as unique opportunities go, though, I think this one was pretty straightforward. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. He's going to be in a Trios Championship match. So I thought that was cool. And it also, I like it leading to sort of Dante Fox and Killshot now having to bury the hatchet and work on a team, I think is cool. So
reminds me of my favorite Trios champions. We're going back to that sort of formula.
Back to the basics.
Yeah, well, that's what made the Trios Championship so much fun to begin with. So I'm hoping that this really turns out well.
Rolling along
in the hypothetical season four.
Yes, I agreed. Rolling along, it took us to the baddest bitch in the building, Ivelisse, taking on the Queen of Darkness, Katrina. I was skeptical about whether or not this match would actually take place because of Evie's injury and everything like that. I would have liked a little bit more vignette build if they knew it was going to happen. I wish they would have shot some things that could have built this up a little bit more and keep it fresher in the fans' mind and everything. But, I was impressed. I've never seen Katrina work. I know she was Maxine at WWE, but I wasn't really familiar with her work there. I was impressed in terms of first outing in the temple. I thought they delivered. I thought they did. It was one of the most brutal female matches I've ever seen. What did you think?
I thought the match itself was fine, but there's two big strikes against it for me. One you already touched on. They allowed this storyline to just fall apart and wither away. I thought you can have vignettes. You can still have Ivelisse participate in Lucha Underground, even if she can't wrestle. And that's how you keep this alive. Because honestly, even someone who follows the story and cares about it, I was like, I don't really care anymore. And then my other strike against this match was I feel the wrong person won. Yeah, Katrina is an all-powerful witch. I don't even understand all of her powers exactly. I think she should have won the match.
Yeah, I would have liked to seen that, but I get it, too, from the aspect that, you know, Evie's 0-2 got cost both times by Katrina. This was her revenge. But I think they could have done it. I like that they used the stone sort of to be Katrina's own undoing there, but I think they could have maybe done that a little bit better. However, kudos to Ivelisse for wearing a female crimson mask like no other. Like, she got hit over the head with a couple bottles, and, that was vicious, man. And,
yeah, it looked gnarly.
Yeah, I actually thought this match exceeded my expectations for it. I enjoyed it. I was, of course, rooting for Katrina, and I love Ivelisse, but Katrina's my gal. So, and I get what you're saying, that she needed to sort of look more all-powerful. And I agree with you there, that I think they could have done more with that to sort of showcase her powers, and maybe more with, like, her getting clobbered with the stone or something like that. I don't know. They could have done something to sort of make it make a little bit more sense. But, you know, that's a minor quibble. Post-match, though, Crane shows up and starts brutalizing Ivelisse with a hammer to her foot, which I thought that was a cool visual in terms of post-match beatdowns as far as those go. Starts brutalizing her knee. What'd you think of that?
No, I thought that was great. That's why what I was saying to you earlier was I would have had that be where Jeremiah Crane reveals to Ivelisse, we already know as watchers, you know, that he's into Katrina. That's where it is. Like, he's coming out, and Ivelisse at least would think that he's coming out to help her.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he just swerves and basically betrays her in a pretty brutal way. Then hopefully maybe her and Son of Havoc can get back together.
Yeah, I could have done with even, like, if she'd, like, re-raised the Disciples of Death or something like that to, like, come out. Or, I don't know, something to showcase her power. I did like the bloody lick mid-match that, like, smeared the blood all over Katrina, because that goes back to Carly's Instagram post where I was worried that she died at the end of this season. So I was like, oh, no. So I was I was happy to see that come to fruition, not with Katrina's death, because I was still worried throughout this whole match they were going to kill off the character.
We just found out who her mom was.
Yeah, less worried since that revelation, but I guess what I should say was worried this whole season that was what was going to happen. That took us to the main event of part two, which was the mask versus hair match, Phoenix versus Marty the Moth. I thought this was one of the best matches of Ultima Lucha Trace. I thought it was one of the best slow burn stories that we've gotten in wrestling, period. It's built up over the sort of really the length of Lucha Underground's history has been leading to this culmination of the Marty and Melissa interaction with Phoenix as the vessel for Melissa here for the portion of it now in season three. What did you think of this?
I thought the match was fine, but honestly, I kind of consider it forgettable. Also,
really?
Phoenix, I know exactly what Phoenix's face looks like, so I almost feel like he has been unmasked at this point. Mil Muertes practically did it more than one time, and now, he was wearing it like a hat during a part of the match.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Phoenix took a beating. I will say, and I agree with you, I'd prefer if his mask didn't get ripped so much, you know?
Every time.
Yeah, and it is, it can be bothersome, for sure. But I really liked this match a lot. I think Phoenix plays such a great hero, such a great underdog. So him and Marty just plays such a great sort of psychopath villain. I liked all the little things in this match with Marty doing, like when he would sort of when he fell on his face by, you know, supposed accident and everything like that. Just his uncoordination at times and like his sort of just manicness. He does, again, we've talked about it so well, the little things that Marty does so great. I thought came off very well here in this match. And I'm usually, you know, take all like shenanigans with a grain of salt. I loved Melissa's involvement. I thought that was an awesome, awesome ending. There was the moment of the match, you know, Melissa finally kicks Marty in the balls. Marty stumbles, and there's this great camera shot because you see Marty in the foreground on his knees, and then just Phoenix coming out of the background just with a flying knee to the back of his head that set up the end of the match. And they do the double pin where Melissa jumps on top of Phoenix, putting an end to this feud. I thought was great. And then Mariposa turns on Marty when he tries to get away. Melissa calling Marty a pussy, by the way. I thought that was great. And they cut his hair. I was just happy Phoenix didn't lose his mask. I thought this was a great culmination of one of the very, very good storylines that Lucha Underground had done this season. I thoroughly enjoyed that match. What did you think of the shaving and all that stuff and Mariposa and all the extracurriculars, I guess?
I mean, I don't really care about haircut matches and things like that. And I never was in doubt that Phoenix was going to keep his mask and that Marty was going to get a haircut.
I agree.
It seemed ridiculous for it to be the other way at all. And then as far as like with Mariposa goes, yeah, you know, she understands a certain sense of fair play. He was being a little brat.
She also owed him one.
Yeah.
So, because we never really got resolution to that. And she, you know, was not a fan of all of his doings and stuff like that with Melissa anyway. So a little bit of comeuppance, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they have a weird love-hate sibling.
Emphasis on weird love and also hate relationship.
All sorts of things going on there.
So that's how it is in that family.
Got to keep the bloodline pure.
Yeah, but that was the main event of part two of Ultima Lucha Trace. Ultima Lucha Trace part three kicked off with the last Luchadora standing match, Taya with bat in hand versus Sexy Star. What did you take me through what you thought about this match? Because it was another brutal women's match.
Yeah, and I was going to say this is the match that exceeded my expectations because I didn't think that I really cared about it, but it ended up being a lot of fun to watch. I think, as far as the story goes, the right person won. It's not who I was rooting for. I was rooting for Taya.
Yeah, in light of everything going on with Sexy Star outside of Lucha Underground. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, and also nothing against Taya. We actually are fans of Taya. But
yes.
Yeah. And then I thought this was kind of a good contrast to the other Luchadoras match. A match is the storyline was much fresher, and that they had continued to do a couple of scenes leading up to this. And so, it keeps it kind of fresher in your mind, and it made it more relevant to me. It didn't seem as disconnected.
Yeah.
You know, you almost forget why Ivelisse and Katrina are fighting each other. So, I mean, I liked this a lot. It was a simple feud that wasn't that long. I think it was just created over the summer during the tournament. And, it was fine. I thought it was also just like a satisfying conclusion. What I also liked was Taya just lost clean. You know, she seems to be the one member of the Worldwide Underground that doesn't rely on her friends during her matches as much.
Very good point.
Yeah, I think that's That's awesome.
Taya also wore the crimson mask very well, and yeah, it was another brutal fight. It was it was worthy of the last Luchador Standing moniker. They both went through the table at the end with Sexy Star getting to her feet first. I thought, in storyline wise, for everything that Sexy Star has been through, the ups and downs of her season three, that was absolutely the right call for who should win. And you know, at the time of this taping, we didn't know anything as far as what was going on with her and everything. And it was the right call. And Taya's looked very strong throughout, I feel, so she could eat that loss and be all right with it. And it was And so I thought that was very, very good as well. That also exceeded my expectations. Trio's title match is what followed that up. The Reptile Tribe with Drago just looking awesome in his resplendent green outfit. I thought that was great.
I do like the scale color changes.
Yeah.
I like all the different costumes. And I also, that stood out to me too. I thought he looked awesome.
He did. I think that's my favorite outfit he's had to date. That was a really cool one. And versus the Mac, Dante Fox, and Killshot, both still nursing their wounds and rightfully so. I like the unique opportunity that Dario Cueto set up here. Like you said, it really is the three standouts, or three of the standouts from season three, taking on the Reptile Tribe Trios champions. What did you think about the match?
This is actually also one of my top five of Ultima Lucha. Yeah, this was my number four. And for the record, the Hell of War match I ranked as my number one.
Yeah, we'll get there at the end.
Yeah. I enjoyed this a lot. I like the Reptile Tribe all fighting as a single unit. And Mac and Killshot, they've worked together before in Trios matches, and I love the idea of Killshot and Dante Fox being forced to join forces. Especially when what is beautiful is the two of them fighting in the ring at the same time, because their moves seem so complementary to one another.
Yes.
So when they do like a 1-2 hit against somebody, I just think it's really fun looking.
Yeah.
And once again, it makes me get into that like video game mindset of like a Marvel versus Capcom or something like that. And you can do some sort of like team attack. I was like, I could, even though story wise Killshot and Dante Fox hate each other, it's like, you know what? You should put both of them on your same team though, because their moves are perfect together. They're in sync.
It's like one of those like superhero team ups too that finally happens. That's like, oh yeah, well they have their differences, but when they're working together, it really, it's like seeing like in the Avengers movie, Captain America uses S.H.I.E.L.D. to sort of reflect like Iron Man's blasts and blow up some robots or Chitauri or whatever. It's just, it's cool stuff like that. Just like you said, the complementary offense. I enjoyed this match. I thought I also this was one where it's like I didn't really have any doubt that the Reptile Tribe would be dropping the titles here. I thought we were going to get an Aerostar involvement at some point in Ultima Lucha. That was a real miss for me that we didn't get any sort of follow-up on that storyline, but I guess that's down the road. And I liked the fact that they did, and we don't know until the very end of Ultima Lucha, that Pindar's disobeying of Cobra Moon was going to play such a big role. And so looking
you
back on it,
you gotta rule with an iron fist. You want to be the leader of the reptile
slash
snake
tribe. Oh, I thought Cobra Moon
tribe
looked great too. She looked very cool.
Oh, no,
snake queen.
She's definitely found her element. I think this storyline really fits her, and I love it.
Yeah.
So yeah, kudos to her. She's another one who's just been doing really well as far as what she's been given.
So Team Unique Opportunity did take down the Trio's gold, partially because Pindar disobeyed Cobra Moon. That led to his downfall. The main event of part three was a match that I was very much so looking forward to, and that was the ladder match for the Gift of the Gods, Son of Havoc versus Pentagon Dark. I thought that this is in my top five. This was, I thought, a really fun ladder match, a really fun match befitting for the Gift of the Gods championship. Two guys that just the believers really love, and I thought they had great chemistry in the ring together. I thought this was a really good match. What did you think?
Also in my top five for very much all the same reasons that you just said. These guys did put together a great match. I'm kind of glad that I didn't watch this until after I watched TLC and WWE, because this would have put that to shame. This is how you do a match with a bunch of ladders in it.
Yeah.
You know what kind of helps is Son of Havoc has like such like a brawl style to him, especially with his character. And Pentagon Dark, thrives on fighting dirty.
Yeah.
And, just getting it down to like really just beating the crap out of your opponent. So yeah, a match between these two is great. And it wasn't some sort of grudge match or anything like that. It really was just a means to an end. Both are just trying to get the Gift of the Gods championship. So the story is more just each of them trying to succeed and then just brutalizing one another in the first place. I also couldn't help but think, I was reflecting a lot while watching Ultimate Lucha, was just like where some of these characters were when they were first introduced to the temple. And I'm just so proud of both of these guys a lot because neither one really came in with much fanfare as far as how they were proceeding in their matches. And I told you, I was not a fan of Pentagon when he first came in. I thought he looked goofy, and he came in that match with what, Drago and Phoenix. And I just felt like, you know, there was a real disconnect as far as coolness factor and things like that. Now I mean, I don't want to downplay Phoenix or anything like that, but Pentagon Dark is cool. And so
he's the coolest guy in wrestling, pretty much. He certainly has, you make an argument.
Certainly in the temple. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you're right. These
guys. No, man. Roman Reigns is pretty cool.
Hey, Johnny Mundo is pretty cool. Prince Puma is pretty cool. But Pentagon Dark. Like, amongst fans that know who he is, it's kind of the same vibe as if you're into the NWO. That's kind of the vibe it was. It's like, dude, I like this cool new bad guy type character. You know, you're either in on it or you're not cool, bro. It's like DX or NWO kind of deal. Right. And you're right. They both have come so far, and this is such a great spot for both of them. Like I said, their chemistry in the ring was very apparent. I'd love to see them go at it again. You know, I thought they worked very well together. And the one thing I will say is I think they picked the wrong finish for the match because when Pentagon did the package pile driver on the chairs, that's it, man. That's the moment. You wrap it up right there. And then they did another cool table spot that followed it. But I think reverse the order on that and you got yourself the perfect finish because that looked so brutal on all those chairs. I was cringing for both of them. I thought that was the place to end it. But Pentagon Dark did prevail. Aztec Gold for the first time for him, which is surprising to say given how popular he is. But, yeah, finally gets his hand on Aztec Gold. As I suspected, this was his match to win. And I do think it was foreshadowing a cash-in for him, which is what Son of Havoc wanted to do. But he came up a little bit short here. But, yeah, that was definitely my top five, and it was in your top five as well. Great main event for Ultima Lucha Trace Part 3. I would say Ultima Lucha Trace Part 3, maybe the most consistent that just had, it was just like three matches of, you know, of pretty much equal quality. I will say the main event, you know, stood above those, but it was very consistent, action-packed episode. And it ended with a vignette, though, Vampiro and Prince Puma in their little dojo area there. What did you think of that?
I thought it was fitting. I thought it went along with the story as far as those things were. It reminded me a lot of the Pentagon Dark training vignettes from
season 2. It's the same set.
Yeah, it's same set and everything. And, you know, once we knew that Vampiro was his master, we got to start seeing some of the exchanges. So, I mean, we knew Puma was going down this path. We don't see so much the like, torture training like that Pentagon got.
Correct.
So
he's a soft touch.
It was more just like, it was more like philosophy and things of that nature.
Yeah. So that leads us to the finale, though. Puma is ready, according to Vampiro. And then he sort of cryptically said, Vampiro referred to his master, I believe, at the end of that vignette. So
yeah.
Vampiro's working another side there. So as we suspected for a long time,
everybody answers to somebody, right?
Yes. So, yeah. I don't know who that guy answers to, but so we get to the Ultima.
It goes full circle. It's like how the president technically is supposed to work for the people. So the guy at the highest rung actually then works for the masses.
Wow.
On paper.
Yeah, in theory. we get to the Ultima of Ultima Lucha Trace, the fourth installment of this epic marathon of Lucha Underground's finale event. And, given it everything that was going on outside of Lucha Underground, all the casting season 4 in doubt, I watched this with just like a heavy heart almost. You know, I almost didn't want to watch it because I know what the portent of this episode could be. It could be the last one ever. and it made me really sad. And watching it, but it made me like, I guess, nostalgic and just and like sort of bittersweet, I guess, is the way to just talk about all of this. But Ultima Lucha Trace Part 4 starts off with Matanza versus Dragon Azteca in the steel cage. And I thought this was another just a long build storyline. I do think they could have explained a little bit more, you know, where Rey Mysterio was and everything like that. We get that later. But what did you think about how this thing, this had a little bit of some classic Dario Cueto and some other stuff in it. What did you think about this?
Yeah, and a couple of things that kind of pissed me off, but I mean, it's consistent with the story. It's something that's supposed to piss me off, so I'm not that bothered by it. I always kind of felt rough about this match just because it clearly is not in Dragon Azteca's favor. His style is fast. His style is supposed to be avoiding Montanza's blows. Trapping him in a steel cage is obviously going to be something that hurts him. My favorite part, of course, was Matanza throwing him through the,
oh my God,
the damn
dude.
Fence and
that
out
was
into
insane
the cage.
Visual.
And then, yeah, I was thinking what Stryker then just said. I was like, well, his feet are touching the ground. I was like, does that mean he won?
It's not the first time that's happened. Big Show did that to Steve Austin.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's like, you know, his feet are touching the ground. That's the rule. My only thing would be like, no, maybe you have to get back in the ring and actually climb over a part of the cage and then touch the ground. But I mean,
Dario just decided to restart the match.
Not specifically written that way. Yeah, Dario is such a son of a bitch, man. And it's like, okay, so you just basically wanted an excuse for your brother to beat the crap out of this kid.
Yep, exactly.
Which is all it is.
Yeah,
and which I don't have so much of a problem with because that's who Dario's character is. And none of this is on the up and up anyway because it's underground street fighting.
Yeah,
so you
get
away with it.
Exactly. Yeah. And it did fit with who Dario is and everything like that. And then Dragon Azteca went after Dario after that point, starts stripping him down, which, as you know, in via text, was kind of a weird attack style on Dario. Plus, he looks so good in his suit.
What's our end game here, Dragon Azteca?
I don't know. Show off a small pecker.
I did not understand what he was doing. Yeah, is that what it was going to be? He was going to
emasculate him.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone laughing.
Yeah, very heel move of Dragon Azteca. But of course,
well, he's always kind of.
He's
walking
that line.
On the edge, isn't he? Yeah, if Rey's not there to pull him back.
Yeah.
There's a lot of potential. Little Anakin.
So the match gets restarted, and Black Lotus makes her return. After the last time we saw her, she took out Pentagon, both arms. And she's making a return. They teased at the start of the episode because, you know, the whole lie that Dario spun way back when that, you know, Dragon Azteca killed her father. She takes out Dragon Azteca Jr. here, though. Which leads to Matanza picking up what I thought was the right call for him to win here and look strong. I don't think Azteca needs it. He's still young in storyline, so he can
need to start booking Dragon Azteca in a match that he's allowed to win, though. Because
yeah,
I was thinking of his list of accomplishments, and there's not many. I don't expect
Trios
him
champion.
To beat Matanza. Yep. And that's just him? He was with Puma and Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I want him to be able to do something. Right now, he's still just potential.
Given time, he will take it to another level, I feel like that, and I kind of enjoy that. However, Lotus returned, attacked him, only to then attack Matanza.
Because she hates everybody.
I guess, she's just an angry bitch.
Well, I was... What, you never met one like that before?
Fair enough.
My whole thing was, I thought with that one vignette, Azteca Jr. had kind of helped her figure out that it's like, no, I think Dario's lying to you, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why are we going back to this? I'm mad about her attacking
Dragon
Azteca Jr. If anything, I kind of want to ship those two together. They've got a lot of the same enemies.
I agree. But the thing is, they never got their actual match from last year's Ultima Lucha.
Well, blame Pentagon for that.
They did. With malice aforethought. Took him out for a good while.
And the crowds chanted for women to be mutilated in the ring.
It's true. They did. That happened. But then Lotus gets her hand on his cannon. And then Lotus gets her hand on Dario, though, calling her a liar. This is one of those things where it's, I wish she had thought out a little bit more what she was going to say because she just kept shouting liar.
Yeah.
but I did like Matanza showing up behind her and then just like.
That was cooler.
I like Dario being like, I'll tell you something. And then Matanza just flattened her and he goes, I am a liar. I mean, they saved it with that because Dario is the best. But that was one of those things. And you see it all the time in wrestling. Yeah. I remember one time, even the glorious one, Bobby Roode was in NXT facing off with somebody, and he just kept saying the same line over again. It's like, you know, you gotta, you know, have like a little rotation going. I feel like, but you know, heat of the moment, these guys are great performers, so I'm not going to cast any more aspersions than that. That is a minor quibble, but this one, that match and everything, this was not one of the standouts of Ultima Lucha Trace to me. I get why it had the position on the card that it did, because I mean, it's freaking Matanza, and that's, I mean, he's one of the main guys, so he's a monster. We then go to another one of my top five matches, and we'll go through all of those at the very end here. But the Gauntlet of the Gods match, Jeremiah Crane versus Cage versus Mil Muertes, which Dario Cueto then announces that it's going to be elimination style, anything goes. This was another match sort of akin to the Hell of War match that was just a lot of brutality. And they went through just so many things in this match. I'm not even sure how Jeremiah Crane got busted open in this match. I have to go back and watch it again. But he was a gusher. And like the visual of him, because Jeremiah Crane, again, and I will throw him in the conversation with Dante Fox, Killshot, and Mac as much of anyone as being a standout. And not only that, winning me over. Because, again, when he first came on the scene, that vignette, all cards on the table, did not like him, was vehemently against him. I ship Ivelisse and Son of Havoc. He was acting like a douche. And, like, I'd seen him in NXT and wasn't a big fan of what he's doing there. You have won me over and then some. He was such a bright spot of Season 3. So awesome. So freaking awesome. And, I don't even know how he got bloodied, but bloodied he was. The skewers to Cage's skull, and we were watching, and I was like, you know, was he just sticking them in his hair? And it's like, no, Cage is bleeding from his head, and then took a DDT with them in his head. Mil Muertes going through the plate glass and just gouged on his arm, the blood covering his entire arm. There's a moment in this match where Mil Muertes is lying on a table outside the ring, and Cage superplexes Jeremiah Crane through the table. Dude, Mil Muertes takes all of Crane's dead weight. I have no earthly idea how much that must hurt, but it's just the sheer madness of this match.
It's okay, man. He's dead.
Yeah, I guess so, but he definitely lost one of the... I was blown away by this. What did you think?
No, dude. Man, did you give the match justice as far as your description? That's exactly what it was. And I think... it's so fitting because of what they were fighting for. They're fighting for the gauntlet.
Yes.
And so, and these are just such forces of nature, especially Mil Muertes and Cage. Cage is a machine. He's just this unstoppable force. He already, I would assume, still has some residual power from the gauntlet coursing through his veins. And Mil Muertes obviously is just he's death. He's death personified. So he's ultra powerful. And then Jeremiah Crane is mortal, but he's just so crazy enough that he can actually go toe to toe with these guys. And I think that's why it was so great that his face all of a sudden was so busted up.
Yeah.
Because it's like a guy like that, as tough as he is, and I think it was a really good point that you mentioned that he's had such a great season three, he should barely be able to survive this kind of force.
Yeah.
And so, I mean,
But he's so
batshit
crazy.
I really enjoyed this match. This was very close to being my favorite of all of Ultima Lucha. Of Ultima Lucha Trace. I thought this was just outstanding. It got to the point where I didn't know how it was going to end, and I didn't even know how I wanted it to end. And then how it did end, I think, was the best case scenario.
I agree. I was thinking about it too. I was like, well, if it's going to be elimination, Crane's got to go first, which he did. And then I think you got to have Mil go over to get the gauntlet, which he did, and then we get another Lucha Underground Ultima Lucha return. We've been talking about this all podcast. Who haven't we seen once this season that returns on the possible last night ever of Lucha Underground? King Cuerno, he shows up to continue the hunt. The hunt is back on. He takes out Katrina and Mil Muertes and makes off with the Gauntlet of the Gods that Mil Muertes had just won. What did you think?
That was great.
Lights go out. Cuerno's there.
That was so good. Yeah. It was great to see him. It was great to see him against Mil Muertes. And then it was so awesome that he had stolen the gauntlet from him.
Yeah, it was incredible. I was not expecting that, to be totally
honest.
Me
neither.
And so, like, that's
one of
the gifts.
I'd given up hope on King Cuerno.
So did I. I thought that, you know, maybe he was just dead for a while, you know, and they were going to plan bring him back next season, you know, and which would have been great, too. But
or he's just dead and we never saw him again.
But we saw him at the live event, so I figured they'd bring him back, but
maybe
that was just a local thing.
Yeah, but you were talking me out of it, saying it's like, maybe some contractual obligations, but not all the actual stuff.
But
I was like, damn, you might have a point there.
Did not see it coming, and that's one of the beauties of Lucha Underground is, as a wrestling fan that's seen almost everything,
still surprises you.
It can still surprise you. What a phenomenal match. That was tremendous. We then go to the Johnny Mundo documentary produced and directed by Taya. Finally,
she did a great job.
She did do a great job. What did you think of this video? I thought it was hilarious. Just totally hot.
That whole thing, if that was a totally real documentary, I would watch the entire thing.
I wish it was.
I thought it was. I love the sit down interview parts with Mundo with Jack. And
I don't
DJ.
Let him do whatever they want.
That's great. It's like, it's great because he kind of lets us do whatever we want. And Mundo had to shoot that down. I also, like PJ said, you know, if you're not the best, then what's the point? Well said, PJ.
Yeah, ditto. No, I love the Mundo doc. It was well worth the wait. Taya's narration was great in it. Just it was just thumbs up all the way around. 4 stars for that film.
I get that 7 Aztec medallions.
Yeah, absolutely. That should get an Academy Award for best doc. Great job, Taya.
At least nominated.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, if the wrestling thing doesn't work out for her, she ever gets sick of it, she's always got documentaries to fall back on.
But that takes us to the main event of Ultima Lucha Trace. The career versus title match, Johnny Mundo versus Prince Puma. I mean, this is like, you know, everything that we've known about Prince Puma's future with Lucha Underground. I mean, it was pretty much common knowledge that he was probably not going to be coming back for a fourth season. But that being said, this still had some surprises, a lot of surprises in this. I guess just cutting to the chase, spoiler, everybody's watched it. So Prince Puma eventually does lose his career on this night. I have to say, in terms of putting over a guy that's leaving the company and letting him go out on his shield, go out like a superhero, Lucha Underground did a phenomenal job of showing you exactly who Prince Puma was and who he had been, what he had meant to the temple. Everything, just the embodiment of Prince Puma, got to shine throughout what would turn out to be 2 matches. I mean, do you agree?
Yeah, it was a great showcase of his talent and skill. And he went against 2 real quality opponents.
Yeah, I thought Johnny Mundo versus Prince Puma delivered absolutely on the hype of their match. It was it was terrific. That's in my top 5. Just your thoughts on that match.
I mean, yeah, I like it. I like when Johnny and Puma are in the ring against each other. I think they have great chemistry. They have incredible skill, and they're the kind of guys that complement each other very well. But once again, you know, Worldwide Underground with their shenanigans, that kind of stuff, it pisses me off because it made me think of just like Mundo's entire championship career. And then it made me think of when Puma got the title shot, and then Mundo's like, well, I'm putting the championship on the line. Why don't you put something on the line? And it's like, no, Mundo, that's not how it works. That's the downside of being a champion. The upside is that everybody acknowledges that you're the best, and you get to say you're the best.
Yeah.
And that's because you defeated all these quality opponents in the ring. Not you, because you cheat every time, and so you don't have that sense of superiority, and it's basically an empty championship. So from a story perspective, like, my view of Johnny Mundo, the character, has decreased to a certain degree because he's not earning any of the wins that he had. And then when he gets defeated, it's like, well, yeah, because you're not as good as you think you are as that your record shows, because you guys are constantly pulling shenanigans.
No, I completely agree. However, I will say in this match, and we've railed against the shenanigans involved with Johnny Mundo's matches, I'm glad Worldwide Underground got involved in this match because Puma eventually did prevail. So I thought it made him look all the stronger for it.
And it allowed the return of
Angelico,
which
is
great. Because,
he wrecked their shit.
He wrecked their shit, and then it helps perpetuate that storyline of his feud with them going into hopefully season four. I didn't have as much of a problem with it this time just because, you know, this matches everything. I wish it hadn't happened so many other times because it's like, well, yeah, when are they going to come out? Because they always come out.
Yeah,
it would have been better that Mundo is so desperate for to win that that's when they finally help him cheat.
Yeah, no, I agree. You were talking about earlier as far as just the chemistry that Puma and Mundo have, and I liked on commentary how they played up and they really tugged at the heartstrings, because I think Jeff, I mean, most Lucha Underground believers knew in their heart of hearts this was probably it for Puma. But
yeah,
there's always that like nagging doubt. I mean, I tricked myself, convinced myself to believe in it. And so I really liked on commentary how Stryker was selling it, how he sold, like, you know, the first main event of Lucha Underground, how they, you know, just all their, the history of their rivalry and everything like that, and just their paths and all that. I thought he did a very good job selling that. And Mundo, I know you aren't a fan of what they've done with Mundo's title reign, like you were just talking about with the interferences, and I agree with you, but in that sense, I liked it tonight. But overall, just give some more thoughts on, I mean, how do you think this came off, if this were, you know, just as far as living up to the standard of Mundo and Puma?
Well, first, yeah, it definitely lived up to the standard, because I thought the two of them still had a great match. And two, I think the reason that the interference wasn't as bad in this match is just because it served a purpose. It wasn't just happening.
Yeah.
You know, for the sake that Mundo's the heel and he has heel friends, so they cheat. It was a great showcase to introduce Angelico back, basically.
Yeah.
His triumphant return.
I think more than that, too. I mean, which was a great return. And if they go forward, like we've talked about many times, that Mundo and Angelico will have a great singles feud. But I think it served to pump up Puma. Like, he was, I felt like,
well, because, yeah, it showed the heart that he has, and also that, yeah, he was kind of just unstoppable.
Yeah, I thought honestly, Puma on this night was built up to almost mythological proportions with what he went through and what he overcame, and I liked it. I loved every minute of it. Like, I think if anybody else, I would have cried foul on a couple things and some things we'll get to later, but with Puma, it just worked, and as a wrestling fan, a longtime wrestling fan, and know how these things usually go when somebody's leaving the company, and rightfully so. You go out on your back and you put somebody else over that's going to be still with the company, and that's the way the business works. And I get that, but Lucha Underground is such a unique situation, and it's just, to me at least, as an outsider looking in from all the people that we've talked to, it's felt like such a unique locker room, and just people coming into their own, becoming household names because of this show. I really appreciated how they treated Prince Puma on his way out the door, which we knew was coming. So he actually, so every near fall, I'm on the edge of my seat again, even though I know. And Puma triumphing over Mundo eventually was, I don't know, it was a great moment for him to become 2-time Lucha Underground champion. I mean, how awesome was that? I mean, that was legitimately a great feeling in a night that would turn out to be all for naught. But what did you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, and you know how I feel about Puma. And so, I mean, and even though I knew this was coming, it's one thing to hear rumors and even, you know, quote unquote, know what to expect and then to actually watch it play out.
Yeah.
So it was heart-wrenching. And then at the same time, like you said, yeah, it was just such a, if you have to go out, he went out as triumphantly as possible for somebody who eventually loses at the end of the night.
Yeah, he really did.
And they've really given him so many accolades, you know, throughout the three seasons. I just think of how triumphant he was in the first season. I mean, the guy was awesome, you know.
He is still to date their greatest champion.
Oh, without a doubt. And like you said in a long ago previous episode of ours, you know, a real fighting champion.
Yes.
The guy was constantly putting the title on the line against a real multitude of competitors, too. A lot of different people had a shot at him in the first season. It's kind of cool to see how the story has progressed and changed since then. And it's funny because Puma kind of fell into this limbo, I thought, partway through season two. And then season three, the storyline changed, so it was kind of okay that he was as far away from the championship as he was, because he was kind of going through this darker path and his character kind of had to process through a few things. But season two, it just seemed that after how successful he was in season one, what do you do when you're not champion anymore? You can't always be number one contender.
Yeah, no, for sure. And certainly not do that and sustain the sort of same level of mystique and credibility.
Exactly. And he kind of fell, you know, into like Mysterio's group. It's just like Rey Mysterio Jr. all of a sudden kind of has like two young proteges.
Yeah.
And it's hard to, you know, stand next to a man of such legendary status as Mysterio and, you know, not kind of have your character diminish because of it.
Yeah, no, I feel you on that. And one thing that you brought up about his darker path, I love that tonight he was wearing the old school gear.
It made me really happy to know that that's how he was going to go out. From a story perspective, it didn't seem to make much sense to me. But knowing everything that was coming into it, I was happy to see him in his old colors.
Yeah, no, absolutely. An iconic outfit. And so, yes, he eventually he triumphed over Mundo. He is the first ever two-time Lucha Underground champion. But hold on, says Dario Cueto. We're going to have one more match. Even though when the Gift of the Gods championship was created, he said you can't just cash it in whenever you want. But
that was one of the charming things about it, honestly.
I know. And I guess Pentagon technically gave him enough time. He gave him a week.
Well, I was going to say, I feel that, which I think is the minimum amount of time anyway.
Yeah.
Like you say, I want to use this next week. So I feel like that's their out. That's their loophole in the story, is it's still being used to that sense. It's not like Pentagon came running down the ring, waving his belt.
And cashed in.
Yeah, and then threw it at the ref.
Yeah, so Dario announced that he's going to have one more match. It's going to be, and he did the ring announcing himself. He announced Prince Puma, Lucha Underground champion, versus the Breaker of Bones, Gift to the Gods champion, Pentagon Dark, who came out. I mean, is that... Then you know. Dario then added the stipulation that's essentially loser leaves Lucha. You know, they both had to put, so the title is on the line and then both their careers are on the line. So whoever loses is not only not champion, but also gone from the temple.
And that's the moment the smiles faded.
Yeah. And
the temple went silent.
It's because, again, it's that's when you know. And. Yeah. I think even at that point in time, there had been rumblings about, you know, what certain people's future would be and stuff like that. So, and at that point in time, it certainly wasn't going to be Pentagon that was leaving. And so that was a tough pill. But then again, the believers, I would say, I mean, Puma commands as much of the audience in a Pentagon match as anybody that he faces, along with Rey Mysterio. The believers were still, I think, firmly in the Pentagon camp. I mean, at one point in that match, I mean, the chanting of ole, 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 cero, miedo kind of deal like that, it was crazy. The vibe still once the match started, picked up for Pentagon Dark again. And this match is a standalone. I actually think is a very solid match. I mean, these are they have ridiculous chemistry as well, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And they have such just natural, like, they're such natural opponents for one another. Because no matter what Puma's done this season, he still is very much the light. And Pentagon, no pun intended, is very much so the dark side of things. Both command, like, fandom of the believers. But they're such great foils for one another. They have this... It's special. It's like Austin Rock kind of, you sort of get that electricity when they're going to be facing off, because you know they both have so much to offer and they're both, you know, just top tier. And so I really enjoyed this match. And normally I would have been crying foul if this was anybody else, but like, oh man, this is like kind of one taking away from Pentagon's moment. Why does he have to do it, you know, on a guy that just had a match? But to be honest, that's also kind of Pentagon's style. You know what? He doesn't care that it's not on the most up and up. I mean, he certainly doesn't need it to be that way, but he's going to take an opportunity when he finds it. And I really enjoyed this match just as a standalone itself. I wanted to get your take on it, and then I wanted to break down a couple of things from it. What'd you think?
Sure. I think you made the best comparison about the two of them back in the beginning of season two. Which, Goku, Vegeta.
Yeah.
You know, they can both be considered good guys because they're huge fan favorites, but very different schools of thought as far as how they approach a match or a fight. And even when they're on the same side, it's only a matter of time before they come to blows again.
Right. They're just, and their philosophies are just
exactly
at odds.
Yeah. And I agree with you as far as if anybody was going to take advantage of a situation like this, it would be Pentagon Dark, because he's not about the glory or anything like that. He's about basically the pain that goes into a match. He enjoys hurting his opponents.
Yes.
And basically the results. You know, he's looking for a win. Those are the two things he wants the most.
And he's come up short in the big one on a couple of occasions. So, and he's lost.
Sometimes by his own doing, though, because he focuses too much on inflicting pain or.
Very true.
You know, his little petty vengeances that he's going for. So, I mean, yeah, this
is also very Vegeta like.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. No, Vegeta's always been his greatest enemy.
Yeah.
His ego. So, and the fact that he's obsessed with the one guy in the whole universe who's a little more powerful than him.
And that to me is like, and again, I love Puma, but I'm a Pentagon guy, is that, listen, if, like, Puma's one, and Pentagon's always going to be like 1A or B, you know? And that's and that's fine. I'm cool with that. And like, I enjoy rooting for a character like that because I think it's interesting.
It serves him well, too, because he's a chip on the shoulder kind of guy. You know, he can never be the guy.
Yeah.
It would take away from him a little bit.
Completely agree. And so it will be interesting to see how they manage that going forward, if there is a going forward.
Phoenix, maybe.
Yeah, Phoenix is. And I thought about
especially
that during his.
Phoenix is so highly decorated.
I thought about that during the mask versus hair match. And we've mentioned it throughout this season that, you know, if Puma did leave, that they're in good stead with a bona fide babyface superstar in Phoenix. And just so great that Phoenix and Pentagon are brothers. But this match, I actually thought. It was very good in its own right, and after everything that Puma had endured, Puma honestly took a beating in this match for sure. But there were times when, you know, I mean, he came with an eyelash of winning this match, which, again, anybody else in that situation, I would have been pissed because I was like, oh, man, you're making Pentagon look like, you know, like he should be able to win this.
Right.
But not only that, Pentagon breaks one of Puma's arms in the early going of this match, which. Was insane to see how they did it
that
early.
So awesome.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And I love that, you know, they sold Puma popping it back into place and then heavily taping it. And Puma did a pretty solid job of selling fighting with only one arm. There were a couple points where he did a couple moves where I'd be like, maybe they shouldn't have done that. But
yeah.
he did, a pretty damn good job of selling the injury in terms of, like, sort of working almost a one-arm style match. What do you think about that and how they went to that so early?
Because, like, once again, we were saying, you know, Pentagon is about the win and he's about inflicting the pain. So, yeah, if he could get Puma in that position so early on, he would. And then so Puma's at an even greater disadvantage throughout the match.
Yeah.
And then I think it just kind of goes to show, like, what you were saying as far as, you know, Puma went out as well as he could. It's a showcase of his talent in every regard and even how well he can sell a match, you know, that way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the guy's always been good at selling other people's moves.
Yes.
And, this was just, it was really awesome. It was fun to watch. I didn't rank this match in my top five of Ultima Lucha just because of the emotion that went into it. It was hard to watch, and I loved it and hated it at the same time.
Yeah, I have it just outside my top five because there's so many great matches.
Yeah,
but... I mean, it was just knowing it was closing in and every kick out that Puma got was just incredible, and Stryker getting more and more exasperated on the mic and Vampiro getting weirder and weirder. as
Vampiro's facial expressions.
I think we both called it that it was going to be just this long con. The long con was him rejoining with Pentagon, or so it would appear, because he pulled Pentagon out of the way when Puma went for the 630. And, dude, Stryker was so pissed. I loved him yelling at Vampiro, don't come back over here. I'd rather do commentary with this kid sitting right here than you. Like, just the anger. Because Puma's the hero. He is the Goku. And, I mean, what did you think about when Vampiro's turn and everything with that?
Well, I mean, we had called it, and it seemed to be going that way. It was appropriate. I thought how they showed it was good with the pulling Pentagon out of the way and then... the vignette that comes later, it's just...
I would have liked a little bit more direct interaction with him and Puma afterward, though. Like a you little, even what? Like a shaking of the head or like something like that, you know, like a in disbelief kind of deal and like kind of almost like a breaking of the spell from Puma's end too.
I feel like that works more if Puma wasn't leaving.
Fair.
Because then there would be, you know, the revenge storyline and Puma going back to his roots.
Yeah.
Things
very
like
true.
That. I feel like it just doesn't matter. You know, so don't worry about it. And I almost feel like Puma did break the spell as far as how he left.
Yeah, no, very true. And we'll get there. So Vampiro pulled Pentagon out of the way, and then Puma kept kicking out. You know, even after that, I think he kicked out of a package pile driver and he kicked out of a Cerro Miedo driver, and then eventually the package pile driver got him.
That's
I believe.
What did him in, right?
Yeah. And then that was it. 1, 2, 3. It was over. Puma had lost.
Oh boy.
His career was over. There were Pentagon cut a promo, which was another hey. And then you know that he
that's trademark now.
It is, dude. It's a catchphrase. At this point should be on shirts.
I want a hey t-shirt.
Yeah, for real. But he essentially announced that, you know, he's Lucha Underground champion now. It's his temple and stuff like that. And Vampiro just, you know, drinking it all in, so to speak. But, you know, and again, I'm a Pentagon guy. But what I think, and I'm so thrilled that he is finally champion and everything like that. He deserved it. He'd been over. Like, I still believe he should have won it last season. But it was a great moment for him here too. But what I really, when I went back and rewatched it, listening to Matt Stryker's sort of, and it stood out the first time I watched too, but his almost eulogy for Prince Puma and talking about what an honor it had been to know him and to see him grow and respecting everything that he had done for Lucha Underground and just wishing him the utmost best. That to me felt like it was the show and just everyone involved speaking directly to Prince Puma and from the heart. And understanding what he had done and just what a unique just run that whole show had under the, you know, with a lot of it on Puma's shoulders, putting him on the map when he was the champion in season one. And I thought it was so well said by Matt Stryker. And again, to Lucha Underground's credit, man, they had this great shot of Puma walking through the fog back towards the back and sort of disappearing into it. That was just like, wow, it's real. He's leaving. I mean, what did you think about how, like, just his exit?
I thought the exit was handled as well as it could be. It just, it's weird because Prince Puma is Lucha Underground to me, especially, that season one, he was the flag bearer. Everything story-wise that mattered revolved around him. Season two and season three, I felt like, you know, enough people started to rise up and there were other storylines and it wasn't just the Prince Puma show. But I mean, to a certain extent, you know, he was the guy always. And whenever he showed up in something, it's like, well, Puma's most certainly a contender. You know, this is something that he's going to be involved in. And when he wasn't champion, it's like, it's really only a matter of time before he's fighting for it again.
Yeah.
I felt.
Yeah. No, he has to be. I mean, you're right. He's one of the guys that anything that's big, Puma has to be in the mix for.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. I thought that was done very well. It was so sad because I wish Ricochet, Prince Puma, whatever you want to call him, I do wish him the best. If he jumps to WWE, which he very well might, I hope he has great success there. But I also worry that he's not going to be treated as well elsewhere as he was. You know what I mean? And like, God bless him.
Was he going to get stuck on 205 Live?
It's possible. I mean, maybe he'll make more money, which is great because, I mean, at the end of the day, that's, you know, providing for your family and everything you
want
to do.
I want him to succeed however he feels success is.
Yes.
You know, whatever that means to him, because he's a great talent and he provided seasons of tons of entertainment for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all the best to him.
Yeah, so exit Puma, that took us to the ending montage where, again, we pick right back up with Puma walking through that fog and then dropping his mask, which was just sort of a heart-wrenching visual to see coming just everywhere we've come, you know, with the start of Lucha Underground to now. And then we jump to King Cuerno in his trophy room with the gauntlet, which I love Cuerno's consistency. He always has that same look whenever he's rocking the cowboy hat in the trophy room. And stop me if you have a take on any of it.
Well, I was happy that he wasn't wearing it still.
Yeah, and I don't want to see him get corrupted by it.
And I was thinking, I was like, maybe that's actually the safest place in the world for it to be.
Very true.
Because he would rather just have it as a trophy. You know, he has no desire really to harness its power. Or that's what I'm interpreting. I mean, who knows? Maybe he's going to bust it out.
Maybe it has a thrall of its own that eventually he's just going to have.
That's what I was wondering too. If it just sort of drives you to using it as well.
But man, Cuerno's awesome.
Oh no, he's a cool guy. It was good to see him again. Let's just act as if season four is happening. I'm looking forward to what goes on with him next.
Yeah, absolutely. Looks like obviously restarting the Mil Muertes feud. From there, it was Sexy Star then with at some type of red carpet event or promo event, and a little girl brought up a box saying that she hasn't forgotten about you, and of course it's the spider, and Sexy Star goes crazy. Now, operating under the assumption that there is a season four, I would be somewhat surprised if Sexy Star was a part of it.
Yeah, I don't see how that would happen either, and they've done so little with exactly what the hell that means.
Yeah.
That I think it's okay that we delete that entire storyline.
Yeah, that's one of the loose ends that I wish they had dealt with a while back. But I guess, they had bigger plans for that and what that would mean. I don't know, maybe some.
Well, it's funny. It's tricky when you introduce something so long ago, but then there's not like the continued reminders of what it's about. Like there was spider stuff for a little while and then just sort of stopped,
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, that was weird, and then they just pick it up back here, I guess, just as a reminder to tide us over. Masquerita Sagrada says that he's not the White Rabbit, but that he can take him to him, and of course the Rabbit Tribe following the little White Rabbit down the rabbit hole, as it were, going God knows where. I love these ending montages every season have been so good. Melissa and Phoenix getting into the Firebird as they drive away, followed by, God, smoking hot Katrina, the real Firebird. With Crane looking on, no Mil Muertes that I could tell in the ending montage. We then got something I have to ask you about. I mean, this was one of the most surprising part of the ending montage. Daga apparently alive and beheads Pindar at the behest of Cobra Moon, so he can become her king. What did you think?
It was cool to see him. Happy he's still alive. Thought they referenced that Pindar had destroyed him.
They had mentioned something about what Pindar did to Daga. So I don't know.
Wouldn't that have been on Cobra Moon's orders? Like, I don't see how this is all just Pindar's fault.
Well, he disobeyed her. So.
No. That I get. Unless, are we saying that Pindar has disobeyed her a couple times and another time Daga was sort of hurt?
Yeah, it's possible.
I'm glad to see that Cobra Moon actually did seem to have feelings and affection towards Daga. It wasn't a trick.
Yeah, it's
to
nice.
Lure him to feed her reptiles.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I was just thinking about something. I don't know. Are we going to see Daga put on like some type of reptilian skin or outfit in the next
How
season?
How awesome would it be if he was wearing like Pindar armor?
That's what I was thinking, is that he should, and they like almost like it's a new skin for him, like a snake. So I would be very into that, but I did not see that one coming.
No, so. I thought something had fell through with Daga a while ago and he had gone to wrestle elsewhere. And so they just wrote the storyline of, Daga was killed.
And then beheaded Pindar. No moss.
You know what? I'll tell you this. Pindar never really lived up to the expectations for me, because his name was dropped beforehand.
I would have preferred Vibra to be Pindar and Pindar be Vibra.
Exactly. The way they talked about Pindar before we saw him, it was like, whoa, this guy's some serious business. He's a serious contender. And then it was just like, I don't know. And then he lucked out that Cage got disqualified, or Cage would have annihilated him in that tournament.
Yeah, he did.
So.
But I liked Pindar, but I agree with you. I think he would have been better served to be Vibra, just given the hype and everything. Just would have made more sense. Given what Vibra, being so tall and everything.
Well, because the way they were talking about Pindar, at first we thought he was the leader of the reptile tribe.
Yeah.
Because we didn't even know what Cobra Moon's part in all of it was.
That's right. or the Snake Tribe, as we even affectionately knew it then.
And that's what they were then. You know what? Maybe Pindar was the leader of the Snake Tribe.
But yeah, which is an offshoot of yeah, so a smaller offshoot.
Well, Drago joined again, and it's like, okay, well, we'll be the Reptile Tribe.
Yeah, we got Draggies, not Snake. We got to move on. And you're like a Stegosaurus anyway, so what are we even doing here? So yeah, that was surprising. We get Vampiro with, I don't know who that is. Is that the same person that's in the car with Dario and Agent Winter? Who is that? Some his mysterious master.
I feel it's something else. It's, you know what it sort of reminds me of, going back to Mortal Kombat? It's like, who the hell Noob Saibot, you know, serves in the whole Netherrealm? And how that's like its own separate entity. I remember when I was learning about that when I first was playing Mortal Kombat. I was like, wait a minute. It's not just like Shao Kahn. There's like other stuff going on. This is getting complicated.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about Vampiro.
These are like darker forces.
I was like, is Vampiro actually like Quan Chi or Shang Tsung at this point?
This is chaotic evil as opposed to the lawful evil that is in charge of the gauntlet.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I think it's somebody else. But yeah. I also would not be shocked if you know, he is connected to that. But Vampiro also seemingly portraying that he eventually will betray Pentagon again, which I'm kind of like rolling my eyes at. But although to be fair, he'd never betrayed Pentagon. Pentagon betrayed him. But I kind of feel like at this point, I'd rather have them together and actually be a thing, like a partnership, because that was something I felt shortchanged with.
I feel it's sort of like a Sith thing. You know what I mean? That you learn from each other for a certain amount of time, and then you either get cut down or you cut your master down.
That's
interesting. How it has to go.
Yeah. Okay. I'll go with you on that. We got Matanza and Rey Mysterio both locked up behind bars, which so that explains where Rey was. Just conspicuous by his absence on Ultima Lucha Trace, I really felt. You know, I just thought that was so bizarre. But
it's a big deal. He should have had, you know, at least his presence there if it wasn't for this. And then whenever Dragon Azteca gets the crap kicked out of him,
he's
usually count on Rey to protect his fallen body. Yeah.
So I'm glad.
Doesn't his family wonder where he is? I mean,
I'm glad. No.
High profile.
Well, maybe that just shows that there's maybe some problems at home. No, he's just gone again.
I feel like we would have heard if Rey was gone.
But yeah, so he's under lock and key with Matanza. Agent Winter shows up and Dario pleading, saying that, you know, he'll get the gauntlet back, not to worry. And then Winter says, you know, don't worry, you get a pass because you'll be dead. And he shoots him. Shoots our beloved proprietor, Dario Cueto, and says that it's under new management. What'd you think of that?
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that Dario had the temple taken away from him. To me, that actually makes sense. If this organization is as powerful as it is and as ruthless as it is, they wouldn't be able to tolerate that sort of failure. And Dario's pulling shenanigans himself anyway. It's not like he purposely messed up. I mean, he did purposely mess up. So, I mean, it didn't surprise me. And I don't think Dario's dead anyway, as far as with the phone call and everything. But he's going to have to be, you know, digging himself out of trouble again, kind of like at season 2.
What I heard on the phone call was Papa, and I heard on the other end Mijo, and then the disconnected signal. But I thought his dad was dead. I thought they killed him with the bull.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not gonna dig back and watch stuff to try to piece it together.
Well,
I'll let them just explain it to me however they want.
Well, if we even get that, but that was how.
Oh, yeah.
Season 3 ended with a to be continued. And let's go over quickly our top 5 matches of Ultima Lucha Trace. Coming in at number 5, I have the Gift of the Gods ladder match between Pentagon Dark and Son of Havoc.
Son of Havoc. That's my number 5 as well.
Okay. Good deal. So we're in lockstep there. I had just outside the top 5. I had Pentagon and Puma closing out the show as an honorable mention. Number 4, I have the hair versus mask match between Marty the Moth and Phoenix. I really enjoyed that match. I think I enjoyed it a lot more than you did. But I thought that was a wonderful closeout to that storyline. What do you got at number 4?
I have the Trios Championship match: Dante Fox, Killshot, and the Mac versus the Reptile Tribe.
Okay. Number three for the best matches, Ultima Lucha Trace, I have the triple threat match for the Gauntlet of the Gods between Jeremiah Crane, Cage, and Mil Muertes. I love that. The brutality of it. I just, that match was insane, and they deserve to be applauded for it. What do you got?
I have Prince Puma versus Johnny Mundo.
Okay. Number two, that is what I have. Prince Puma, career versus title against Johnny Mundo. I really just enjoyed everything that they had Prince Puma go through to still pick up the win there and still swerve the people out there that assumed that that is how Puma was going to be going out. That's what I have at number two. What do you have at number two?
Our twos and threes are switched. I have the gauntlet match, Mil Muertes, Cage, and Jeremiah Crane. Yeah. I loved that match. And it was a close number two for me.
Gotcha. So
it was almost my top spot.
And yeah, number one, we both have the same number one, the Hell of War match, Dante Fox and Killshot. On the first night of Ultima Lucha Trace, they stole the whole damn show. It was so impressive. They got so much time to do it, too, which is a big part of it. And just hats off to both those guys. What an incredible match. What an incredible season for both of those guys. And they really, along with Jeremiah Crane and the Mac and Marty the Moth and stuff like that, I feel like that they really helped put their name out there even more in this season. So well done to them. That means that's the end of Lucha Underground Season 3. And I just wanted to take a minute, if we haven't already done enough, just to talk a little bit about Lucha Underground and what it has been for me as a wrestling fan. And Jeff, you feel free to chime in as well. But when I interviewed Chris DeJoseph several months ago, we had a moment. I'm not even sure. I think it was at the end of the interview, but it might have been off air, where I thanked him for sort of restoring my fandom in pro wrestling, something that I've loved since I was a little kid. And, you know, we both sort of bromanced out about how we both liked Shawn Michaels and how we didn't think that, you know, we'd like pro wrestling as much again once Shawn Michaels retired. And I reflected on that over the past, you know, few weeks as I sort of felt this sinking feeling that Lucha Underground would be coming to an end, and just how thankful I am to have had Lucha Underground for these past three seasons and how it really has. It made me realize a lot of WWE's flaws a lot more and other places' flaws and everything like that. But it also, it just made me like wrestling more again. It got me back into it. It got me, in spite of that, I'm consuming more WWE again like I was when I was a kid. It fully engrossed me, and it only enhanced my love of pro wrestling in all of its forms. It got me going to more indie shows. I became aware of more of these people and that I could see them locally and that, and all these different things. We started this podcast, which it's been great interacting with all you believers and everything. Just all the things that Lucha Underground gave to me as a lifelong wrestling fan. I have to tell you, watching Puma go through that mist of the entryway, I felt like the show was walking with him. And it made me really sad. It was, you know, I'm not going to say that like I was up there crying or anything like that, but it has been my favorite show for the past three seasons of television that I've watched. And I'm really going to miss it. If this is it, I do feel like that they emptied all the bullets in the chamber and they told a hell of a story. They gave us an incredible finale. And I'm thankful for the time that I had it. But, man, I can't help but feel like there's still so much more that they could do with it. You can go ahead and say what you got.
Well, I agree with basically everything that you said. It showed areas of weakness in WWE and other promotions. It also just sort of showed a different way that you could present professional wrestling in a way that I think is a lot of fun and is also perhaps a bit more palatable for people that have kind of shut down the idea of even watching professional wrestling. I've suggested Lucha Underground to a lot of different people.
Yeah.
And, you know, the results have been pretty good, even if there's somebody who never watched professional wrestling, gave up on it a long time ago, you know, considered it stupid, that sort of thing. And I don't even want to get into all those complaints and opinions as far as pro wrestling goes, because it's not for everybody, and I get that.
Yeah.
But this is, it's so much fun. And how many times do we compare it to video games? Because it is like a video game come to life. I would love to read a comic book about this. I would love to play a video game about this. It's such a rich cast of characters, a lot of very different storylines. There's a little something for everybody. I think the humor has always been on point. It's never been overused.
Yeah.
And the action's just been wonderful. And I know that there were talks as far as like what a season four would look like. I don't mind the season block things. I think that's fine. That's one of the problems I almost have with WWE. You get burnt out.
Yeah.
You can't keep up with it constantly. I also like the idea of being able to watch a wrestling promotion that doesn't rely on pay-per-views. It's just major events that are on TV. And then that way you can also spread it out and do interesting things with it. And you can have a match one episode that then builds into the match the next. I'm thinking of the Mac with the unique opportunity, and then he gets a trios title shot match in like the next episode. Like that to me is a lot of fun, and
it was like
it's
a comic
new
book.
Way to twist stuff. Yeah, it's like a comic book, and it really is like one of those fighting video games. Like if they made a video game about this, I wouldn't want it to be like one of the wrestling games. I would want it to be a bit more extreme.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just I can't say enough good things about it. I've really enjoyed it. You're the reason why I became a fan. You showed it to me, you and your roommate, when I visited you guys two Christmases ago, I think, or around your birthday. And I was hooked immediately once I started marathoning the first season.
Yeah.
And it was so great. And every episode, you know, especially season one, because everybody was new. So every episode was introducing me to new guys, and the stories were just starting.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole thing, I was growing with it, you know, as far as like there wasn't even a championship yet. And then the belt gets introduced. And what are these medallions? And, you know, everybody was just sort of figuring things out. And it was a lot of fun to be able to go through that with it. Like, you know, I mean, WWE is established. It always was.
For sure.
So, like, I never had that going into it. It was already an institution. So, I mean, it was fun to be on the ground floor with this.
Yeah, no, you said it. That's a great point, is to be there along for its birth and all that stuff. And, man, I cannot tell you how much I enjoyed the fact that you fell in love with it as much as I did. And just having somebody, you know, that I'm so close with to be able to discuss it with and just really geek out about Lucha Underground, and then meeting other people, be it through this show or whenever, and just the ride that it took us on was so great. I mean, I have such fond memories when we went down to the Lucha Live event in Escondido. That was so much fun. And
that was a lot of fun. Great crowd too. Everybody was just friendly and positive.
And such first class people that are associated with the El Rey Network and with Lucha Underground.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say enough about them and all the help they've given us in getting talent for this podcast or letting us go to events like that. And just really being top notch in that regard. I mean, I root for all the people involved with the production, because they're just like really solid individuals. And like you said, it did show you that there's a different way to present wrestling, and like in some ways a better way. I think maybe one of the things that Lucha Underground, maybe season three should have been shorter, because I mean, they added so many more episodes because the buzz around, I've never seen a wrestling show so universally loved online. Like the wrestling dirt sheets love Lucha Underground. They're the most critical people, and so if you can get over with them, I mean, more power to you. So I mean, and there's been talks about Lucha Underground maybe trying to catch on with a different network other than El Rey, or staying with El Rey and having a way reduced budget. I don't know how I feel about, especially the latter. You know, if it's going to be a watered down Lucha Underground, I'm not sure if that really works. If you take away those things that really make it work, it's not really Lucha. It exists in this rarefied space that no wrestling show's ever been in before. It's like how it, and I know they probably loathe this comparison to ECW, but in certain respects, it's apt. Is that it is a special promotion, and it was the sort of the talent that was involved with it, both in front of the camera, in the ring, and behind it. It's like a stitch in time. And I feel like if you try and resurrect it with different people or you take away some of the elements, I feel like it's not going to be the same, you know?
Yeah. And I think you're right as far as it's its own special thing. It's like this little niche, you know, it scratches an itch that, you know, WWE couldn't and can't.
Yeah. And for like all those things that we've discussed, like the why I love Lucha moments, are things that, like, I feel like if you bring in certain different staff members, that maybe they start making those decisions, and then it becomes, I don't want to see Lucha Underground become typical. That's the last thing I would want. Or low rent. Like, I know it's grindhouse style, but
yeah.
I've never felt like that Lucha Underground's production value is bad.
I only feel, the only way I feel you could cut back on the budget and not the quality is just if you drastically shorten the season, you know?
Yeah.
Or the roster.
Which I think, I don't think this season needed to be, don't get me wrong,
this
I
season
appreciate
was a little
episode.
Too long, but then there were it was a huge break though, too.
Yeah,
so.
I think you could do it without the break and everything like that, and I think that would be
I think
just
it would be
fine.
Better, too. It'd be easier to avoid rumors and spoilers online if you just knocked it all out. I mean, it's hard to dodge that stuff.
Yeah, I just, it is if this is the end for Lucha Underground, I just have to say, you know, thank you to everybody involved. This could be our very last Lucha Lowdown as well. So I want to thank all the believers and the listeners for helping make the podcast what it was. It's been a hell of a time interacting with you all, and honestly, sort of reinvigorating me to wanting to do a show like this. I'm still gonna keep doing wrestling content in some form or another. But it was nice to be sort of a part of this, and like you said, Jeff, on the ground floor and standing up for a product that you like really believe in, and it was the underdog, you know, and it was getting somewhere. I felt like the underdog was actually getting traction, and it was never going to challenge WWE, but it didn't have to. I just wanted it to be solidified in its space that it was in, and I hope El Rey sees the fan base that is created and everything like that. And I hope the dogs of other promotions keep, you know, the talent from being pillaged too far. And I feel bad for the talent too. They've been left in the dark by this whole thing. Absolutely sucks. And that's a really difficult situation. And I think what started out as an awesomely beneficial situation for them became difficult when their future became cloudy and stuff like that. You know, it's a lot easier to swallow like, oh, I can't work these dates because I have to tape this awesome thing that I'm a part of. But then once your that's where the TV side of it sort of became its undoing, and I do think the midseason break played a role in the unraveling of this. I think it disgruntled a lot of the talent because they didn't know the future, and I think it just I don't know I go back to that moment, and that to me is when I first started feeling like something could be wrong. But that being said, Vampiro's been optimistic. You know, I know everyone's got to put on the positive outward face and stuff like that. But we will see what happens for Lucha Underground if season 4 does come about. And Jeff, I know you and I, we do the Best Damn Nerd Show, so whatever's going on with all of our favorite luchadors and everything like that, we will keep carrying the standard for that and everything. But
we could just transform the show into an Alexa Bliss podcast. I could talk about her for hours every week.
I know you could. We'll talk about her and whatever Carly's doing acting wise. Dude, I'm so sad to say goodbye to these characters if this is the end. You know, I love so many of those characters. I mean, Pentagon just got the championship. I'm not going to get to see him enjoy that reign at all. I mean, what's going on with the amulet? You guys got to come back. There's so many things I need the answers to. I feel like the little kid at the end of Shane. But it's just...
You got to read the, like, novel tie-in.
Screw that. I mean, I will read it. I want to see it on the screen. And I want, you know, like, when's Joey Ryan going to get his comeuppance? Did he see Dario get shot? What's the deal with Daga? You going to give us that and then just decide out of the blue to rip us off? I can't abide this. What's Aerostar doing? We're going to unite the tribes, man. Can't go. Oh, it's so sad. But I really, on behalf of both of us, a very sincere and heartfelt thank you for all the entertainment and just restoring our joy for professional wrestling, which we both love a great deal. And hopefully we will meet again soon. But until then, vaya con Dios, Lucha Underground. For Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.